It's going to take a little bit, but it's coming up. As usual, I always put together a presentation to help guide us through today's meeting. As always, I put together that presentation, and it will help facilitate the process, Chairman Dahmer. It is a lengthy meeting, as I indicated from the very beginning. As you notice that it has and it bears our name, it's the Self-Insured Risk Trust Fund Board Trustees meeting. This is our agenda for today. It is very lengthy. And Chairman Dahmer, with your permission, what I'd like to do is change things up a little bit. If you notice, item 6 is the actuary presentation, and we've actually put the cost allocation recommendations as item 8. I'd like for the actuary to do her cost allocation presentation along with item 6, so it's actually the recommendation that comes with item 8, but it's kind of odd for her to break up her recommendation along with item 8. I'd like for her to condense it under 6 and 8 all at the same time. We will discuss the recommendation under item 8 if that's okay with you. So item 6 and 8 will be done in concert with her presentation, and then we'll have the actual discussion as the board trustees under item 8 if that's okay with you.
I think that's a great idea. I was hoping we would do that. Thank you.
All right. If that's okay at this particular point in time, we will go ahead and make that change. If you will note that in the minutes, Joanna, we will go ahead and proceed with the call to order and then establish a quorum. So, Joanna, if you will, please begin with the roll call. And then we'll proceed with the introductions. Joanna, please.
So, for the roll call, I'm going to start with the board members. Keith Dahmer.
Here.
Ted Moeller.
Present.
Nicole Lowry.
Here, present.
Joyce Garland.
Here.
Okay, and then Allie Matthews. Present. Michelle Savandra.
Present.
Melissa Lay.
Present.
I don't see her on the line. So I would actually at this point, is she there?
Yes, she's here.
Hi, Allie.
Okay, go ahead.
Martha Castro.
Present.
Sarah Husick.
Present.
Vince Tracy.
Here.
Emily Aguino.
Present.
I believe that's everyone in this meeting.
Okay, fantastic. So we do have a quorum of the board members present. So at this particular point, I think we do have a quorum present, Dahmer, so Chairman Dahmer. So at this point, what I'd like to do, I don't think we need any introductions. I think everybody is pretty familiar with who is on the line. At this point, for the sake of ease, the introductions, we can proceed with just simply going on to the next item in terms of approval of the minutes, Chairman Dahmer. At this point, the minutes were mailed out for the sake of facilitating this meeting. At this point, Chairman Dahmer, I would say that unless anyone has any corrections, you can entertain a motion for the approval of the minutes.
I reviewed the minutes before the meeting and didn't have any suggested edits or any discussion topics. So unless any of the other trustees did, I certainly would entertain a motion for approval of the draft minutes as presented in our packet, our meeting packet.
No changes, so moved.
And a second? I'll second it, I guess, if I'm allowed as chair. So this is Keith Dahmer. I'll second the motion to approve the minutes. And then I forgot, Allie, will Joanna do a roll call vote for us for every action item we take, or Is that how formal we are with this board?
So I think what we need to do, because people are not familiar with who the motion maker and who the second is, what I would like to have happen is if the motion maker can indicate their name and the second, that would be helpful. Or I can, at this point, indicate who the motion maker is and who the second is, and then you would need to have those actually indicate aye or nay as an approval. So the motion maker is Nicole Lowry. The second is Keith Dahmer. And then as the chairman, Dahmer, you would need to indicate all those in favor say aye, those opposed, nay.
All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Are there any opposed to the motion? Hearing none, I think it approved unanimously.
The motion moved. Motion is carried. So the next item on the agenda, and there are all of the pages of the financial statements. So I'm going to give you a little bit of background that will help facilitate what is before you. If you can recall in the minutes, at the January 27th meeting, which is the last time we met, we had a different finance manager working on Fund 54, and at the time, while she was simultaneously working on the fund, we were putting in a new accounting system while she was preparing the migration of the fund. We were also working on migrating to Workday. And during that time, she was mapping the accounting system to Workday. So mapping the accounting system or mapping the fund required her to transfer funds to Workday. And she had promised at that particular point in time to provide the financial statements through December of 2021 by the end of February. And those were to be mailed out to the trustees by the end of February, which never occurred. Fast forward to present, we have the end of June 2022 financials. This is unaudited. And what you will see is the unaudited financials. And immediately what you will notice is there are some drastic changes to the fund. And one of the things that you will note, and Joyce will assist with any questions that we will have, is you will notice some changes immediately to the operating revenues. First, and I will point this out, on the operating revenues, you will see a loss
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Was that speaking?
Not been able
to, I think it's Mike Henley.
Yes. I've been trying to get on the video, but I can't. Well, gave me a wrong ID number. I apologize.
Is this Mike?
Yes, it is, Allie.
Yes, Mike.
I've been trying to get on that video, but it won't. The Microsoft says it's the wrong code or something.
That's okay, Mike. Do you have a question?
No, I was just letting you know I was here, and I apologize for my tardiness.
No problem, Mike. We are now on, we're looking at item 4B. We're looking at the financial statement, and this is the financial statement associated with the end of fiscal year 22. This is through June 30. We're on item 4A. And I was providing some context to the unaudited June 30 financial statement for fiscal year 22. And so what we're discussing is the operating revenues. And I was looking at the actual loss to the charge of services.
Allie, yes. Since we just had a quick break, may I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
I am, on my screen, I am seeing a a drive open and a list of file names. Should I be seeing something else like the financial statements now, or should I have seen the minutes, or am I seeing what I'm supposed to be seeing here? Black background.
Hold on just for a minute. Let me go back. What you should be seeing are three actual statements, and you should be seeing item 4A, financial statements, fiscal year 22. Is that what you're seeing?
I am seeing a mouse moving around on a black background that has on this PC 3D objects, desktop, documents, music, and then it looks like a folder is open that has a document for each agenda item, but none of the documents are open.
So hold on, let me make sure that you're seeing what you should be seeing. Let me go ahead.
I'm calling you from Xfinity.
Let me make sure that someone else isn't sharing their screen. So let me stop sharing. Let me go in again and share again. I'm just wondering if someone pulled something in that they shouldn't have. And it could be when Mike Hanley came on the screen.
Well, this is the image that has been on since I've joined the meeting, and it's back to the simple file list agenda updated at the top, item 3A, item 4A, just a list of file lists in a, it looks like presentation meeting 11/29/2002 has been selected, a PowerPoint presentation, but it hasn't opened in my display. And it looks like you're trying to click on it right now, or someone is trying to click on it right now.
Yeah, so you're showing the screen that you're clicking on right now, Ali.
Okay, let's see what's happening. It's coming up. It's scrolling. It's slow in here. It could be that it could be in my office area. I may have to move to a different computer. Is it scrolling at all?
No. I'm seeing your arrow pointing at the presentation. A little round timer went for a little bit, but now it's...
Okay. I know how to fix it. We'll make it... We will do something else. Just showing this. So we know how to make it work. Let's go here. I'm actually going to go to the item here. That's what's showing there. And so what I'm going to do here is stop showing here, and I'm just going to go to this. And we're going to share here, and then I'm going to go here, and then I'm going to go to the actual item. And stop doing the presentation, and and it's going to go to this one now. Because I think the file is too large.
Yeah, so you're still showing the screen.
Yeah. And then make this one. We're going to go here. It's not showing.
Can you drag that?
Yeah, I'm going to drag this over here. It's not pulling. When I go here.
There you go.
Okay, now, is it... Do you see anything at all?
I'm seeing a financial statement unaudited City of Tucson, the proprietary funds combining net position statement, yes.
Do you see it now?
Much better, Allie.
I may actually go into the conference room because I think it should be showing the actual presentation. Did it show anything at all?
No. The screen that you were on, that had the red around it, that's the screen it was showing
until I actually did that?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right, so Keith and everyone else, are you actually seeing the financial statement?
The combining statement of net position internal service funds, yes.
Yes.
Right. So when you see this, you will actually see the current assets. You will see right here the current assets. You will see in comparison to last year, you will actually see a difference, a very large difference compared to last year. And you will automatically see a huge difference of about $5 million. And the reason for that is essentially a charge of services. And we'll see that a little bit later on. But the bottom line here, when we look at this, is the cash is what we're going to be concentrating on when we actually look at the overall net position. Right here, the 1.3 net position, when we look at last year, the total was about 8.6. We're at 1.3 right now. That is a huge difference from last year. When we go to the next page, the charge for services is what you will note is the huge difference. Last year, we were at about $21 million. This year, at 16.1. This year, when we look at salaries and wages, again, that's where you'll see the difference. Of the large contributing factor for salaries and wages, we had a market study that was done. We had essentially services that we actually employed people. And when I say employed people, we staffed up our services. For the first time, we are fully staffed in safety services. We are fully staffed in our internal litigation unit. So we employed some folks that we really needed to employ. We, when we looked at the market study, we brought people up to market level. We also, when we looked at contractual services, you will see that there's a huge increase here. A lot of that is not only are we looking at the inflationary impact, but we also looked at the fact that we had $1.4 million in increased services contributed to the Fireman's Fund, the Fireman's Cancer Fund. That was an unanticipated service as a result of the legislative requirement change due to the Industrial Commission. That was not anticipated. We also had an increase in contractual services related to some of our services for our workers' comp fund. We also had some services related to our claims management services for vaccine tracking for workers' comp. We had services related to our claims management services. When we look at benefits and claims, we had some payouts that we were not anticipating. We had some large settlement developments, and that's going to be discussed when we talk about workers' comp. We also had some developments in our liability settlements. That's also talked about through the actuarial study. That's 1.65, I believe, for liabilities, some adverse developments in the liability developments. That's talked about. Then when we look at property tax, obviously there's changes there that is a result of the tort liability, and that's basically what we pay out. That's due to property taxes, and that changes every year. When we look at the investment income, that also took a large hit due to the market. Our investment incomes are down a little bit over $1 million. So that all plays into the difference that you'll see that's contributed to the $11 million. There is a transfer in of $2 million that we got transferred in from the general fund, and that's applicable there. But you will see the change in net point, the net position of $8 million of last year down to 1.3. So that's some of the information that I can give you that plays into that. There was a meeting with Mayor and Council that Joyce worked with the Assistant City Manager, providing a financial plan to Mayor and Council to transfer some money in, and she'll be able to talk about that a little later on when we get into the financial plan for FY23 and 24. Obviously, with those changes, that impacted the cash flows. And that's information that you'll see below. I sent out a revised statement that basically reflects the 9.1 million, the 9.5 million that we talked about earlier. That's the actual cash at the very beginning. And that's the corrected information that you'll see here. Are there any questions regarding the actual cash flows statement that you'll see with the financial information that's provided here?
Allie, I know this is Trevor. Yeah, Allie, this is Trevor at the Mahoney Group. Can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
I just had a quick question on the fireman fund of $1.4 million. Is that something, just a one-time lump sum, or is that something that's going to have to be added to annually? I'm just
curious.
Every
year. Every year,
$1.4 million.
It's $1.4 million and it's based on the population. So as the city's population grows, it's based upon the U.S. Census. That amount is going to change. Now, we paid $1.4 million, and this year we paid a little less than that. We paid $1.3 million, and it is based upon the U.S. Census. So as the population decreases, then we're going to pay less, but as the population grows, we're going to pay more. And we have no control over that, and that is due annually. The first assessment was due September, and it's going to be assessed every year, our reimbursement back from that, and it's based upon what we pay in, and our reimbursement was less than $43,000, and I don't think we're going to get any more than that based upon the number of firemen that has cancer and what we pay out. So we can anticipate the return on that to be less than $100,000 versus what we put in on a yearly basis. And the statute,
no,
I believe. Pardon me?
There's no cap on that. So
no,
okay.
There is no cap. Wow. It's census based. And okay. The first assessment was not anticipated, and it became due less than 30 days after it was implemented.
Yeah, jeez.
And I talk about that in the annual report as a challenge that I just submitted to the trustees. And it was implemented, and as quickly as it was implemented, we had a quick turnaround of getting payment in.
Thank you.
And I apologize, Trevor. Maybe I did need introductions. Trevor, who did you say you were with again?
The Mahoney Group. So I'm the insurance consultant for the city.
There we go. Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Yeah.
Nope. No problem.
So I'm going to try this again. So bear with me just for a minute. I want to know why this is not working. So let's try this one more time. Go here again. And I think it may have something to do with this. It's a huge file, so it may take just a minute. And while that is going on, if there's anybody else, Chairman Dahmer, you would like introductions for, please let me know.
Thank you. I just didn't quite catch what he said, and I, me and names and people, sometimes I'm not on top of it. So. Was Trevor, were you with us at our last January?
Yes. So yes, last January, my screen didn't work. Long story short, I was in my car when I was taking the call, but when Drew Newton retired, I've
That's
been
right.
with the city for a couple years now.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
So I'm going to ask, bear with me just for a minute. I'm going to ask one of my staff members to come in here and help me because I can see it and I'm not seeing the red button showing on the screen and it is not working. Hold on just for a minute. I'm going to get Joanna because it was working earlier. And I'm going to go share.
Wrong screen.
And I thought it was.
Should be showing up.
Yeah, it should be. Are you guys seeing it now?
I can see the presentation now. Tally.
Okay, so now I'm gonna fast forward through it.
Looks good now, Allie.
Okay. All right. It just took me a little bit. So we're through the financial statements. Now we're on to the first quarter. And this is quarter ending September 30th. And obviously, this is where Joyce is going to come in and talk about the actual plan that we have beginning with FY23, because obviously we ended with FY22 at a negative net position. And she has worked with the chief financial officer, the assistant city manager, Anna Rosenberry, with a financial plan with helping us with the negative net position, knowing what we have and knowing what we're facing with the outliers. Obviously, with when I say outliers, we have obligations, financial obligations with workers' comp. We have financial obligations with public liability. We have outstanding claims. We're going to continue to have claims coming forward that we are going to need to obviously honor. We're going to need to pay, and we have operating expenses. So at this point, I'm going to ask Joyce to step in, talk about how we're going to mitigate some of those expenses that are ongoing and deal with, the negative net position that we have. And the work that we're going to have to do on the work comp end, on the liability end, it's not just about training. It's not just about, minimizing those losses, but we're going to have to work together and we've got a lot of work to do. So Joyce, will you help me out here with talking about the plan that we have going forward?
Certainly, Allie. And thank you for this opportunity to talk to the commission. So, I'm not exactly sure where to start. I want to give you a little background on what's occurring. So Allie discussed earlier about those items in fiscal year 22 of which the city wasn't aware that we would have to pay, such as the Fireman's Cancer Fund. We also didn't anticipate the large increase to other insurances and the size of some of our claims. So when they set the internal rates were set too low. That was in 22. Well, for 23, when they set the internal rates, in order to recoup or to get the revenues from the other funds to cover the costs, they were not set. They didn't take into consideration any of the administrative costs. So they were set too low. So we did a 5-year projection on the risk management fund. And as we started to peel back the different layers of it, we could see what occurred. And now what is our corrective action? We are going to bring in or transfer money from our numerous funds to at least cover the costs, our projected costs for 22. It's not optimal. I'd like to bring in more, but right now we'd like to see what it would take to minimize any more deficits. And then for 24, we'll set the rates to not only recoup our projected costs, but also to recoup the deficit. I would like to recoup the deficit now, but I need to see what occurs during the fiscal year, and then we'll adjust accordingly. But right now, that's our plan. So staff is working on what those internal charges need to be for the rest of the fiscal year. I should have that information this week. And then we'll start doing operating transfers from the multiple funds into the risk management fund to stop the deficit from occurring. We're planning somewhere around just $6 million coming in from the general fund alone. And then we'll have several million dollars coming in from water, environmental services, highway user revenue fund, and I'll just have all of those details later. But we know there's a problem. We are going to mitigate it. We had that talk with mayor and council, and we will make this okay. I think really where our concern was is we have enough cash right now that there won't be a need for a bond. But as we use that cash, we're not going to be able to make that delta in the coming years. So we're trying to ensure that we stay at about a cash level of $50 million until, of course, things change and it needs to be increased than $50 million. But I don't want this fund to go into that kind of deficit with cash.
So one of the things that Joyce and I have talked about that we don't have a control over right now is the double-digit increases in insurances. And so we are watching the market quite extensively, and that's where Trevor comes in to help us look at the market trends with the types of insurances that we're purchasing. One of the things that we will have to be mindful of, obviously, are the contractual services that we need to look at, such as the TPA concerns, the claims management software concerns. So we're working hard on that. Workers' Comp has a good opportunity right now to look at the TPA services and what we're doing with that. And that's up for an RFP. But we've got to be mindful of those types of services and what changes we can make in that realm that can have an impact, that can help us reduce some of those outliers that we do have control over. So, obviously we do have a tall order, but there are some things that we can effectuate along the way. But the market, we don't have our thumb on that needle where we can direct some of that. So it's going to require some creative work on handiwork on our end and areas that we do have some control.
And I'll just add to that, Allie, because we talked also about the claims in workers' comp and putting in a program of settling workers' comp claims. So that will be coming forth in the next year.
So, Joyce, this is Keith.
Yes.
I'm in the current rate or allocation that the actuary put together. There is a loss allocation and an expense allocation for both workers' comp and liability. I'm recalling historically when we've been asked to provide input on those allocations that the allocations have always had a loss and an expense portion in those allocations. But so what I was hearing from you, that expense allocation didn't include enough administrative expenses, or you said there weren't any administrative expenses in there. Were they just underestimated?
For 22, it didn't appear like there were any. I mean, for 23, that there were no administrative costs included in the rates from the information that I have. And we may be talking two different administrative costs.
Right. Okay. And let me clarify that, Keith. What you have to remember, the actuary provides recommendations based at the 50% confidence level. What we have to be mindful of is when we make recommendations, the actuary indicates that if you want to provide recommendations at a higher competence level, you need to do that to recoup and build at a higher confidence level, and those recommendations are provided on different pages of the assumptions.
Right.
The adoption has been at the 50% confidence level. In the past, it has not gone beyond that, and those are discussions that we have had internally that have not been approved at higher confidence levels. So those are discussions, and you'll find it later on in the presentation that I will be providing to you, that those discussions need to be considered going forward. Because if you're only funding at a 50% confidence level, what happens to the other 50%? Those are discussions internally that we have to start having.
Well, that 50% confidence level, my understanding is that means half the time it's going to be bigger and half the time it's going to be smaller at that level.
That is correct.
Okay, so Joyce, just to follow up, I pulled out my 21 actuary report that has the 23 rate calculation. It's jogging my memory of me being shocked that, you know, the expense allocation for liability was $6 million and the loss allocation was only $3 million. So I remember being startled that the expense portion was twice what the liability portion was. So I'm a little... I guess I'm not understanding how, if we approved $6 million of expenses, not that didn't get in the rate allocation. So maybe we can consider this, we can take this up after the meeting to make sure I understand more what's going on. I don't know that I'm not happy knowing that there weren't expenses included in the calculation for 23, but it looks, I guess I want to know at some point more about what this expense allocation is and what's in there and what got left out maybe, but I don't need to know that right now.
Sure. Well, just one expense that wouldn't have been included in that was the fireman's cancer, right?
Right.
So that was not included in it. So that wasn't captured. So we knew we would have to somehow recoup revenues to cover that. Yeah. There were others. And usually when we've set, like, the board would tell us what the rates are for the departments.
Right.
Okay. And then we would take the next year's budget and we would say, okay, I see by these rates what the actuary was saying. And maybe let's just say for workers' comp, it's $10 million. But we would look at the budget and go, oh my gosh, we actually need $15 million. So then for the city, when we set the internal rate, we would adjust the internal rate to either cover that budget or to increase it. So there's enough dollars coming in all the time.
Thank you.
Does that help?
Yes, that does.
Okay.
Thank you.
And Keith, what's not calculated in there, and you'll see that in the actuarial report, is adverse developments of claims.
Right.
That doesn't get calculated in either, whether that's work comp or liability. So you factor that in as well when they develop adversely, because that's all part of the expense.
Sure. Thank you.
Any other additional questions? If not, I think we're ready to move on. So I just wanted to let you know that I did follow up on the involuntary tort that was submitted for FY24. I did send out an email yesterday to the Oversight Commission because we haven't received an okay for FY22. And she said that they would be getting something out to us in the next week or so. So I can anticipate getting the okay probably in the next week for the amount that we submitted. So it's a little bit over $1 million. So that will be coming in. Again, it's not applicable until the following year to go into the FY23-24 property tax. So we can expect to get that in the mail in the next week or so. But I just wanted to give you guys a heads up that it was submitted and it won't be applicable until FY24. Any questions on that at all? Hearing none, I'm hoping, Joanna, you've been able to get Gail on the line, and she's ready to go with her presentation.
She just came on.
Are you ready?
Gail, can you let me know when you want me to proceed ahead? Your presentation is uploaded and it's part of incorporated into the overall presentation. It is as you submitted it to me.
Okay, I see it. Can you hear me all right?
We can hear you just fine.
Very good. Okay, I'm ready to go. Good afternoon, everyone. Gail Flannery. I'm an actuary with AMI Risk Consultants. And it's my intention not to bore you to death in the next 10 minutes. So I'll try very hard not to be too boring. Let's go on to the next slide, please, Allie. Our firm is based in Miami, and we've been in business for 30 years working with public self-insurance. And this is our 30th year we've been celebrating, and I've been with the firm 25 years. The city engaged us in 2014, and we've been providing our study once a year, fiscal year end, since that time. I'm a fellow of the Casualty Actuarial Society and a member of the American Academy. Next, please. There are multiple things that we provide in our report. There are four main things. And the first one is an estimate of the outstanding claim liability for workers' compensation and liability. The city needs this because they need to record a liability based on an actuarial estimate on the balance sheet for compliance with GASB 10. And our estimate is different from case reserves that are set by claims adjusters because we're including both an allowance for reported claims and for unreported claims and for any unexpected development on reported claims. The other items that we provide in our report, we protect the total cost of new claims for future years. We allocate claim costs to departments for both the claims actually and the administrative expenses. And we estimate the cash needs that the program will need for paying claims the next few years. Next. The breakdown of the reserve liability between workers' comp and liability is pretty simple. 60% of the reserves are for workers' comp indemnity, another 27 for workers' comp medical, and liability claim reserves only account for 12.5% of the total reserve. We always compare our estimates at the end of year, to what we estimated the year before and try to understand exactly what caused any of the changes. This year, there was an increase of $3.2 million in total, pretty well split evenly between workers' comp and liability, and that was a 5.6% increase in the reserve. The workers' comp indemnity increased at $1.6 million, and that was really due to the addition of new claim reserves for 2022 claims, which was $3 million. It was offset by the payout of reserves for older years. So what happened was, you know, we added in more reserves for new claims than we paid out on old claims, so the balance went up. Medical pretty well offset what we added in for new claims. We pretty much paid out an old claim. So there was very little change in the medical reserve. It decreased by $26,000. Liability was a different story altogether. There was adverse development, particularly on 2016 and 2020 claims. And we've listed here some of the specific claims that developed by much more than we had allowed for in the 2021 reserve.
Gail, I will let you know on that last claim, the 201421, we just settled that. We just settled that claim for $37,000. So some good news.
Going.
About, yeah. Yeah. Some good news on that last one.
These are projections for the ultimate cost of new claims that are going to occur in the next 5 years. This is for workers' comp and liability combined. So for 22-23, we think the ultimate cost would be about $10.5 million. And then we think it will increase slowly over time. And by 26-27, you'll be just under $13 million for the ultimate cost of new claims.
And just a reminder for the trustees, the expected confidence level undiscounted is at 50%.
Yes. Projected cash flow, cash needed for claim payments during the next 5 years, workers' comp and liability combined for 22-23, $9,651,000, and then increasing to 26-27 to $11,094,000. The next few slides show the frequency and severity of claims by coverage. So this is a graph for workers' comp indemnity claims, and you can see what's happened over time. The line graph shows the claim frequency, or the number of claims per 100 employees. You can see the decreasing trend over time in the claim frequency, and we're ending up just under one claim per 100 employees, which is pretty good. The bars show the average claim or the claim severity by year, and you can see how that has increased over time, especially a couple of bad years, 2017 and 19 had high severity. But in general, you know, in recent years, you're looking at, $70,000 to $80,000 per claim for workers' comp indemnity. I think we skipped one. What happened to workers' comp medical? You missed a page.
I missed a page.
Let me tell you what happened with workers' comp medical then. You'll see the same decreasing trend in, as indemnity in terms of frequency and a worse upward trend in severity, which goes with medical costs. I think you're incurring about 8 claims per 100 employees for medical, and the average cost is $7,000 to $8,000, something in that range. I'm saying this from memory, so take that as you will. Okay, let's go on to liability then. The liability, on the other hand, shows an increasing trend somewhat in frequency, and running 8 to 10 claims per 100 employees now. The severity, though, I don't know, I think it's pretty flat in general. Not really trending up. 2020 was a bad year. But in general, you know, you're running, 8 to 10,000 per claim.
So what we've done here is what we're going to talk about at this point is the cost allocations, and what I've asked them to do, Gail, is to go ahead and proceed with that rather than move that later on in the agenda. So we're going to go ahead and proceed with that. So
okay.
You can go ahead and talk to that at this point.
Okay, we're allocating our projected costs of claims for future years and the projected cost of, you know, administrative expenses. We're allocating it to department based on a combination of their exposure to loss and their historical losses. And for workers' compensation, police and fire, as you probably would expect, get the lion's share of the allocation, and then followed by, water, environmental services, parks and recreation. Those are the others that get, a noticeable a share, but nothing like a fire and police, which get about half the pie. Liability, police, again, 34%, very close to the allocation for workers' comp for police. But fire doesn't get as heavy an allocation on the liability side. They're grouped with, water, environmental services, transportation. Those all get, 10 to 12% of the pie. And parks and recreation gets another 5%. When we look at the what the self-insurance program is costing the city per employee, for workers' compensation, $1,825, liability, $2,209. These are both increases over last year's estimate. The increase in the cost per employee for workers' comp was $323. And that was really driven by a higher expense component. The Fireman's Cancer Fund was not part of the allocation last year, and that had a bit of an impact. Liability, though, on the other hand, increased to $195 per employee. And both the loss component and the administrative expense component increased somewhat, and that was a combination for that increase.
Gail, this is Keith Palmer. Can I ask a question real fast?
Absolutely.
Thank you. So you're doing a little bit of work to help determine what those expected future liabilities might be. What about the expenses that are included there? Does the city provide those to you? Do you analyze or verify those? Or how is the expense amount, how does that arrive in your report? Is it...
Go ahead. Yeah, the city provides that information.
Okay.
On what expenses should be allocated.
And you don't do any audit work or reasonability determination? You just take them and stick them in? Is that correct?
Yeah, we stick them in. We look at them compared to the prior year.
Okay.
That's why we know, if there's a large change and we're asking. We ask about the Fireman's Fund, that cancer fund, because that really stuck out.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. We're applying the same methods that we've applied in the past for the city. We've got your history. These are fairly standard methods. We have your loss development history. We've got your claims by accident year. And we're trying to project each year out to its ultimate value. We are discounting at 3% to allow for investment income. And we suggest margins for higher confidence levels if the city wants to consider something higher than the expected confidence level. And we always have to put a bullet for uncertainty. Everything's an estimate, obviously. We keep looking for that crystal ball, but haven't found it yet.
Okay. So, for the trustees, for the higher confidence levels, Those are on exhibits I for workers' comp. That's on page 5 of 5. And for liability, that's exhibit 3, page 5 of 5. And then for the recommended funding for future accidents, she talks about that under the summary exhibit, and that's page 2 of 3. And that's for combined coverages. And then for projected cash flow, that's under conclusions, and that's on page 6 under conclusions.
I will say that the cash flow is the most difficult thing to forecast, especially for liability. We don't really know when your liability claims are going to pay out, and we're just looking at the history.
And that's easy to get off because if you look at the table that you provided with the adverse developments, we had a claim back to 2016. We had some as recent as 2020. So if you look at the huge difference from 2016 to 2020 of when claims will actually pay out, it's a huge difference. Does anyone have any additional questions for Gail? Well, Gail, thank you so much.
Certainly. My pleasure.
Thank you, Gail.
Sure.
Gail, again, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
So, Chairman Dahmer, our next presentation actually comes in. We thought at this particular point in time, before we talk about the actual recommendations on the cost allocations, that we'd hear from PFM, the investment committee update, which really won't factor much in here, but we thought you'd want to hear from them, and then we'd have the actual discussions on the cost allocations. I believe Annette and Luke are on standby at this point. We told them it would be about 3 o'clock, and we're right on schedule. I don't know, Joanna, if you've been able to text them and get them on the line at this point.
So, I hear Allie already in the meeting.
Yay! We projected time just right.
Yes. I've been just hanging on the line in the background, quiet. Happy to start with the presentation here, and thank you so much for having myself and Luke. Hi, Keith.
Hi, Annette. I just want to ask one quick question before you get started, if that's all right. And it's going to be of Allie and Joyce, probably. And it's relating to the cost allocations. I know the answer. I just want to kind of, I think I know the answer. I just want to say it out loud. So we've, in those projected cash flows that the rates are based on, therefore, the actual cash flows that are happening projected for the year we're setting the rates for, and our rates have never included a factor to recover any cash deficit from prior estimates that weren't as big as they should be. And are we considering recovering some of that cash deficit maybe by increasing those allocations to try and recover some of our cash shortfall, or is that method of recovering the cash shortfall totally off of the table?
That's a Joyce question, but I believe the response is no. Joyce?
What the actuary provides to me is the base for how we set the internal rates for charges. And then as we go through the budget process, we see other changes that are going to be made, because what they don't know, the actuary doesn't know, is approximately how much our medical is going to go up, how much our other salaries are going to be adjusted, if there's a need for a vehicle and whatever. So we've always taken, at least in my tenure with the city, taken what the actuary has provided, of which the commission approves, and we've added additional dollars to it, or additional, right? So that we are, and this is how we became in such a good cash position, is we would add a couple more million dollars onto it to get us to a level where we needed to be. And now we can see how quickly, if you're not watching that very closely, you can start to go the other way. So I have been in discussions with the city manager to propose to mayor and council additional dollars into the fund for the next several years.
We're covered through this rate allocation that starts with our recommendation.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So keep that
and, so I'll just relax and let you do that then. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And so sorry, Annette, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to ask that question.
Oh, absolutely. I am the same way. When I have a question, I have to ask it right then and there, because as it goes on, I'm like, I know I had a question, but now I don't remember my question. So, no worries. Well, thank you, everyone, for having us today. I am with PFM Asset Management. I have my colleague Luke on the line. He's joined as well. We have worked in the state of Arizona for over 20 years with many municipalities and many of the Arizona clients. In addition, we've worked with the city of Tucson for over a decade in multiple capacities, in the fixed income, the insurance pool, several capacities. And then my colleague Luke, who's on the line, is also So, you know, we've both worked with the city for several years, and he's also a CFA charter holder. So we appreciate the trust in us, and then we're thankful to have the opportunity to continue working with the city. So we have the third quarter report here, and we can go ahead and just jump into the next page. And Allie, I just want to make sure we have about 10 minutes. Is that roughly what we want to keep it to?
Yes, and what I did is I went ahead and incorporated your presentation into ours, but what I did is I went ahead and eliminated pages that had the detailed transactions. So basically, it's the basic presentation minus pages 9 through, I think,
like
39 50. Or something. Like
yeah.
That. Yeah. So you just tell me when you want me to advance, and we're good to go.
Great. Thank you. All right. We'll go ahead and we'll go to the next slide then, and we'll start one more. We'll start with the portfolio snapshot, and perfect. So this is the portfolio snapshot, and I just want to speak to this for a quick moment. So this is the self-insurance risk management trust in addition to what was formerly the workers' comp. And so that has been absorbed into the trust. So this is now the consolidated portfolio for both of those. So it's just the one. Total market value end of September was a little over $43 million. The effective duration of the portfolio is about 2.5 years. And that, or 2.4 years, excuse me. And that is where we had arrived at that duration. The benchmark of the portfolio is a 1 to 5 year duration. So the average of all of those securities in that 1 to 5 year duration gets us to that effective duration of about 2.4 years. The yield at cost currently for the portfolio is at 2.29%. So we have seen this come up quite a bit. So as yields have really risen quite rapidly, and we'll kind of talk about that in the economic update where yields are at, we have seen that come up as well. So over 2% is the yield at cost in that portfolio. So very strong. The yield at market is more the environment of where yields are at the end of that quarter. So we look at both, and that was over 4%. So talking about how those yields have risen very rapidly, it gives us an idea of where yields are at in the market if we were to sell off the portfolio and purchase it back. Not that we did that. The portfolio is fully invested, but it gives us an idea of the yield environment. The credit quality of the portfolio, very high credit quality, rated AA. And then in the bottom right-hand quadrant there is the duration distribution. So it just shows how the portfolio is allocated from that 1 to 5 year duration. So in that 0 to 1 year space, we have about 13% of the portfolio allocated. And we balance that out on the longer end than that 4 to 5 year space, with about 14% of the portfolio allocated. And really in that 1 to 3 year, that prime duration, we have, the remainder of the portfolio allocated fairly evenly. So as securities continue to shorten in duration, get closer to maturity, we're looking at, additional opportunities in the market in line with the city's investment policy as well as state statute. And we continue to really optimize those opportunities and finding that value in the market. So this is what the duration distribution looks like as of right now. Next slide, please. This is the issuer diversification. So I really like this page. We recently revamped it, but one of the things I always like to mention is this is a great reference page. It has the full issuer diversification of the portfolio, and it's broken out by sector. But in addition, it also shows all three ratings. So a lot of securities are split rated, and sometimes there may be a question as to, well, you know, we're seeing that it's rated this, but is there another rating, you know, just confirming everything is within policy. And this is a great reference page for that because it shows all sectors as well as all three ratings. So I just really enjoy it for that reason. But this is just shows all of the holdings in the current portfolio here. And we can go ahead. This is the remainder of those holdings with all of those sectors and the allocation here. Now, looking at the portfolio activity for third quarter, so we evaluate all of the sectors that the city invests in, and we do an evaluation, almost every day when we're looking at different securities and we're rebalancing the portfolio. So for the end of third quarter, well, during third quarter, we heavily purchased treasuries. And treasuries are really the gold standard. They are the safest, most liquid asset class. So we favor treasuries for that reason. And we heavily purchased treasuries in the third quarter. And it also gives us that ability and flexibility within the portfolio to exercise the strategy as we see value and opportunity in the market. We also purchased about $4.6 million in corporates. And then the remainder of that allocation was kind of split amongst other sectors such as agency, commercial mortgage-backed securities, federal agencies, negotiable CDs as well. And then for asset-backed securities, that's that ABS sector, the very last one. We look to continue to maintain that. So there was a slight maturity, and then we had just used those same funds to deploy that excess cash. Next slide, please. Now, this is the sector allocation review. So if we start at the left-hand side, looking at December of 2021, it really shows that evolution of the portfolio from what we originally had started with in the portfolio and then where we added to each of those sectors. So one of the sectors that I'll mention that we continue to reduce our allocation is federal agencies. And the reason that is because there is less issuance in the market. Again, when we think about looking at value, with treasuries being really that gold standard as far as safety and liquidity, agencies are also part of that too because they have an implicit backing by the federal government. But because that sector has remained more expensive and we're not seeing as much value, that is a big reason as to why we favored treasuries. In addition to that, we have also had that corporate allocation really start to grow. And when it comes to corporates, corporates have been a great value add in the portfolio. And the city has done an excellent job in diversifying and having an investment policy that allows that matches state statute. So it allows the portfolio to be well diversified. So we've really taken advantage of diversifying the portfolio, and it's been very advantageous overall. Next slide, please.
So Annette, This is Keith Domer again. That big jump we're seeing is when the two funds were combined?
Actually, the big jump that we saw from second quarter, I believe it was, to third quarter. And, Ellie, if you don't mind, can we go back just one slide, please? And what that jump was additional cash that was put into the portfolio. So we had the workers' comp, and then there was about an additional $21 million that was added, and that's where you see that come in, because we don't deploy all that cash at once. We dollar cost average into the market, and it takes about a full quarter until we get it invested. So that's what that was.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Great question. So I think we can go ahead and probably jump forward one more slide. Yep. This is the certificate of compliance. It just shows that the portfolio remains in compliance with the current investment policy as well as state statute. So we just included that as well. But that really covers the full portfolio. I'm going to jump to the economic update, but I just wanted to ask if there were maybe any other questions that you would like me to review or go back and cover. Okay. Hearing none then. Great. So one of the things that has been at the top of everyone's mind, including myself, really has been that one, inflation, but in addition, that growing uncertainty around the overall economic outlook. So we included this chart, and on the left-hand side, it shows where GDP has been from fourth quarter through third quarter. And one of the most important components and factors of GDP is personal consumption. So we are the drivers of GDP. And if we as consumers are not spending money, we are not out shopping, we don't have additional discretionary income, we are going to see a slowdown in growth, which is very much what has happened. So if we look at this chart on the left side here, looking at fourth quarter of 2021, personal consumption was about 1.8%, so just under 2% there. But if we look at each quarter going forward, we see that telltale sign of that slowing economic growth. So when we look at where GDP was at, yes, GDP did come in as a positive reading for third quarter, but the driving factor behind that was net exports. And net exports are typically a detractor from GDP. So when we look at the most important component of GDP, the consumer, which is personal consumption, it makes up about two-thirds of GDP. So when we start to see that slow down, we know that consumers have started to tighten their purse strings a little bit more. We know that growth has started to slow because now we've seen this for two quarters. So this is one of the trends that we continue to watch as we watch where GDP is going, what the impacts are, but these are the components that make up the full figure of GDP, with personal consumption being the most important of those. We can go on to the next slide, please. So switching gears here, talking a little bit about inflation. This is a great chart that just really shows all of those categories for CPI, which is the Consumer Price Index. And it is a fixed basket of goods that compares how much are we paying for these month over month, quarter over quarter, and year over year. So that CPI headline number end of September came in at 8.2%. So it really peaked out in July at about 9%. And we've seen the Fed be more aggressive with monetary policy. We've seen these aggressive rate hikes. They've really had this mentality of all gas, no brakes. And it's very evident now that inflation is starting to turn and starting to shift downward, which is what they were looking for. So some of those categories, such as energy, which was a huge driving factor for inflation, we've seen that come down. Food has been fairly stable. We haven't seen the cost of food come down yet. But what's really interesting is that orange bar, and that's goods. And for a long time, when we think back to during the pandemic for supply chain issues, goods started to skyrocket because
there was so much money in the market chasing that same basket of goods, driving up inflation. So that's textbook inflation, and that's exactly what we saw. But as we transition and we're starting to see this buildup of inventory from businesses and those supply chain issues ease, goods have also started to come down. And now it's services where inflation is really peaking the most as we think about wage increases that have been factored in, plus just the cost of services as a whole. So this just gives a good picture of the categories and what is driving inflation for the consumer price index. So inflation expectations shift higher. So that was, you know, as of September. In the near future, our expectation is that inflation is going to remain high. As we look into kind of middle to end of next year, the expectation, again, going back to that slowing growth, as we saw that consumers, you know, we're tightening our purse strings a little bit more. We're not out there spending because now our dollar is going towards those day-to-day needs such as food and gas. The discretionary items aren't necessarily getting purchased as much because of inflation. So in the near future, that expected change in prices is still expected to go up. But if we look at the longer term expectation on the right, the next 5 to 10 years, as we think about growth starting to slow, it's really right in line with getting back to where we were pre-pandemic, about that 2.5% to 3% range. And that's typically what we kind of toggle between or really have for the last decade until recently. I will say this is the highest I've seen inflation in my lifetime. I hope it's the only time. I felt like that was high enough. And I'm like, all right, I felt it, got it. So but going forward, we'll get back to hopefully where we were in that 2.5%, maybe 3.5% range. And then looking at the labor market here, this has been a very strong cornerstone overall. The labor market has been extremely resilient. Coming out of the pandemic, looking at the chart on the left-hand side, we went from a 15% unemployment rate, which I will say was higher than what we saw during the financial recession. And we're now back to where we were pre-pandemic, 3.5%. And full employment is defined as 4%. So that is really what we strive to get to. Anything below that is an added bonus. So we're even below full employment. If we look at the chart on the right-hand side, that really shows us that labor force participation rate. We saw that drop quite significantly in 2020 and 2021 as people exited the labor force. So they wouldn't have been counted here. So that labor force participation rate, we now have a smaller labor pool as a whole. So as I imagine maybe even the city, because I've spoke to so many clients, they're like, we have open positions and we just cannot fill them. And, you know, it's a great job market too, and they're really struggling, but we have a smaller labor pool that we are working with now. So that is one of the added challenges in this great labor market is the fact that, you know, the labor pool as a whole is just smaller. So that's really what this chart is showing us. And then just kind of, again, adding on to that employment report. So this was end of September and shows we added about 263,000 jobs. On average, we would need to add 200,000 jobs per month just to sustain our overall economy. So that's about what we try to meet, and that's break even. So this shows where those jobs had been added and into which industry. So, you know, education and health services, even pre-pandemic, those were needed. So that was one of the largest categories where hiring took place. Followed by leisure and hospitality as tourism picked up quite a bit coming out of the pandemic. So those were kind of those categories of where those jobs were added for the month of September. And then looking at retail sales, it'll be really interesting to look at this after the holiday season. So going into the holiday season, you know, shoppers are a little more cautious because of inflation. They're looking for excellent deals. And retail sales in September, we saw started to plateau. They were a bit stagnant. And so, you know, looking at those future trends, we'll have to identify, okay, you know, did we continue to see consumers get out there and spend, or are we starting to see that shift where consumers are deciding not to spend? And we're really experiencing that slowdown in growth And then on the right-hand side, it just shows those categories. For me, I'm like, it's not ideal that I want to be spending my money at the gas station or the grocery store. So those two categories, those are some of the higher ones where money has been spent. But I think this picture will look a lot different post-holiday season. And then lastly here, just looking at the yield curve, this has changed quite a bit. This yield curve is as of October 31st, so almost a month ago, but it still shows a very similar picture. In the front part of the curve, looking at the two-year kind of duration, so that belly of the curve, right in that 2 to 3 year duration. So thinking back to where the city's portfolio is invested and just thinking about the strategy and the value that we continue to look for, we're trying to optimize and deploy cash within those areas. The curve is inverted. And when we see an inverted yield curve, it really points to the fact that a recession will be happening in the near future because the curve cannot stay inverted. Now, if we look longer in that five-year duration, that shows us that the expectation for growth is that it's going to slow. So at some point, yes, the Fed has been very aggressive with their rate hikes, but the Fed knows they're going to have to cut rates. So when we look at this longer-term growth expectation, 5 years and beyond, it shows us that, one, the expectation for growth is going to slow down. And if we look at as we're capturing value, so even in the five-year and the four-year, you know, looking at securities, I've gotten the question quite often, well, why are we buying securities at 4.24% and we can be purchasing at 4.54%? Well, at some point, that 4.24 is going to be the highest point of the curve. So as yields start to drop and the Fed drops rates, we're going to be capturing the highest part of the curve, and it helps mitigate some of that reinvestment risk in future years. So that's when we look at kind of how the portfolio is allocated, where along the yield curve we're seeing value. That's really the strategy overall. And per Arizona state statute, we can't invest out beyond 5 years. And then this is more just the implied Fed funds rate, what the market is telling us. The expectation via the Fed is that at their December meeting, it's likely we are going to get another rate hike. Or two. When I say rate hike, it really refers to just a 25 basis point. Anything beyond that is, you know, two. We've had three 75 basis point rate hikes, or four rather. But that rate is really expected to be closer to 4% towards year end. And the expectation from the Fed is that it's likely that we will see a 25 to 50 basis point rate hike in December, not likely to see a 75. And lastly, just showing equities have also had some volatility. Not only has fixed income felt a little bit of volatility and pain this year, equities also have. We've seen almost a 20% sell-off. But I will say, if I thought back to the last couple years and someone said, hey, equities are going to end in double digits back-to-back years, I would have said, absolutely not. That's impossible. But it happened. So what, you know, as we go into the remaining part of the year, anything is possible. But I think it's likely we're going to continue to see continued volatility in the equity markets as well. So that is all I have for us today.
So I think that's about a wrap. I know that the investment committee, it basically consists of Chairman Dahmer, and at this point it's Joyce Garland. And I know the last time we talked about the fact of leave it alone. The investment policy requires the city to invest the funds using the criteria of legality, safety, liquidity, and return. And that's what Chairman Dahmer and Joyce will continue to practice. I don't think we have any questions, unless Chairman Dahmer or any of the trustees have any question with the process that we've utilized, or if they have any additional questions for Annette or Luke.
Ellie, I was just looking through the minutes of the last meeting where the full trustee board authorized the investment policy. What I was looking for was how often the full trust board revisits that authorization. Was that every 2 years, every 5 years? Is that in line with any of the city's contracting provisions? Do you recall that off the top of your head? Does the full trust board have to, when is the next time the full trust board has to take official action on the investment policy, either to review it and give it another formal approval? Or is it approved indefinitely until we make changes?
The investment policy is in place annually. It gets reviewed internally by the staff. Okay. And when I say the staff, it's the financial division that looks at the investment policy and takes it to mayor and council on a regular basis. It was just revised in 2020. And that's the first time it had been revised since 2014. So if that gives you an idea of the frequency of its revision, it's in place for a while.
So I can sit in my comfort and confidence knowing that we're in good hands and I don't need to have to take any action to confirm that again. Is that correct?
Unless Joyce knows something that I do not.
Okay. Annette, thank you very much. Also, Luke, I didn't see you, but thank you also.
Oh, absolutely. And just to comment in addition, we, as part of our fiduciary responsibility, we review the policy annually. And if there are any changes, we will always make sure to recommend them, especially if there's a change to state policy or any of that. But if there's not, we typically will just say, you know, everything is in good order. We don't have any changes to recommend, more so. But absolutely, just know you've got a second set of eyes also reviewing that alongside with you all.
I will sit in my company and confidence.
Yes, you.
and Keith, we have an annual agreement that has to be signed and reviewed with PFM. So that agreement's also in place.
Cool. Thank you.
Great.
Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you. Have a great night.
All right. Annette and Luke, thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
Our pleasure. Thank you, Allie. Bye.
Okay. So, Keith, when we're ready for the next quarter meeting, just reach out. I will actually reach out to you and let you know when the next quarter meeting is. We met in October, so we definitely will be setting up another meeting relatively soon.
Thank you.
All righty. Thank you. So the next item on the agenda, obviously, is to now talk about the cost allocation recommendations, and this takes you back to the appendices that Gail was speaking to, which is Appendix G and Appendix H. G is for workers' comp. H is for liability. This talks about the loss and expenses. And again, just a reminder that these are at the confidence levels of 50%. This is what you see on the screen. But I do want to fast forward to the next two pages that I provide you, which are at higher confidence levels. And this pretty much addresses the questions that Keith had about the expenses and higher confidence levels. So if we look at the pages that I was referring to earlier, where you can find the higher confidence levels, the next few slides walk you through that. For the higher confidence levels for the indemnity piece for workers' comp, that's Exhibit I, this higher confidence level, and this, again, is for the indemnity piece for workers' comp. You can see at a higher confidence level, it's at 65%. It's $36 million. And that's at the very bottom. And that's page 5 of 5. That's Exhibit 1. And then if you walk through the next slide, this is the medical piece. At 65%, that's at $15 million. And that's Exhibit 2. And then, of course, if you walk through Exhibit, and this is, keep going. So let's advance the slide. For liability, it's Exhibit 3, and that's page 5 of 5. And for liability, it's $9.6 million. So if we were looking at higher confidence levels, when you make those recommendations, you would be taking that into consideration, and it does include the expenses. But again, what the trustees have approved in the past have only been at the 50% confidence level. Now, one of the conversations that we had when Steve Holland was on the trustee board, along with Frank Fry and prior trustees, is they tried making recommendations at higher confidence levels with prior finance directors, and it was presented to Mayor and Council, and it was deemed in a different language and included the language of a surcharge, and it was not approved. The last surcharge that was approved by Mayor and Council occurred in 2013. And so, and when I say a surcharge, that was an additional charge that was assessed to departments to increase expenses and increase charges back to the departments. But what Joyce has worked out, again, as she has said, they will review what it looks like after we have an idea of what the expenses are as we work and walk through this process. So I'm not sure, and this is where I have to rely upon Joyce looking at what the expenses are, because there are many unknowns at this point in terms of what we're looking at with the budget. So Joyce, this is where I really have to rely upon your expertise. Can you help me out here?
Well, I think, Allie, the challenge that we have is it's timing. We know that we have a deficit, and it will not be a deficit by the end of the year. We'll make sure of that, because there's certain changes that we can make throughout a fiscal year to avoid that. But it does take monitoring, right? And that's what I think we've been really good at doing, Allie, throughout the year. Now, for fiscal year 24, we already know that there will be wage increases. We're anticipating that our health insurance benefit itself is going up at least 10%, anywhere between 10 and 12% right now. We're looking at different benefit options. The other costs as far as insurance, I don't have a feel for that yet. But we'll know more as we move through the fiscal year, through the budget process, where we will be for 24. As I mentioned before, we've always used the actuary rates as the base, and then we've added on a percentage where we needed to at least recoup cost, if not have a little bit more dollars come into the fund. Surcharge, that's always something that could be accomplished, but I would prefer that internally with the city manager that we work through whatever funding issues that we have here. Now, as far as the confidence level, that's really up to, I think, this board to decide one way or another. I mean, I don't have any feel for what you're thinking of that. But I think it's just that it's appropriately internally that we are setting the rates to at least recoup the costs, if not add more to the reserves. And that's the other thing that we haven't looked at, I don't know, as this board, is how much the city does have in reserves for workers' comp and public liability. You've seen it all as a whole, but I don't know if you've seen it in the different buckets per se.
So
this is Keith. You're attracting my attention right there. Am I actually hearing that the city has pools of resources outside of the risk trust that are set aside for excess claims? Or did I?
No, we do not.
Not what you were communicating. Oh, okay.
That's not what I was communicating. No. Okay. What I was within the trust, there are reserves, and
yes,
there are reserves for the different pieces.
Right.
So there's a
okay.
reserve for workers' comp, a reserve for public liability, you know, transit and so forth. But, and I'm not sure if you know what those reserves are at the end of 22. Because they're not pretty.
Well, and what I am grappling with is I don't know how hard the market is going to be because of the outstanding catastrophic claims that overall the insurance market has experienced in this particular calendar year, and the quarter does not look pretty and it continues to get worse. So we can anticipate, we can still continue to participate double digit increases across all lines. Workers' comp has been in the past a little bit of a silver lining, but we're starting to see that change. We have seen a nasty year in cyber. And I know that from our experience, we can expect cyber to get really challenging for the city. I'm a little bit concerned about our infrastructure and what that looks like. If we remain at the 50% confidence level, that does not take care of the increases we've been seeing in the insurance piece. And so we've made adjustments for the insurance in the last 2 years. I don't know if we stay at the 50% confidence level, if that attacks the insurance piece. And that's Allie, just the insurance piece alone.
I'm sorry, Allie. I had another question. I think, aren't you currently doing an inventory of the city property?
Yeah, that's my
concern. And okay, so whatever the outcome of that, we don't know what that will be until when. Because certainly the actuary doesn't have that amount. Okay.
No. We won't know the income of that until perhaps the beginning of January. And so what I'm most concerned about is if we adopt at the 50% confidence level at this point, it doesn't take those two factors into consideration. And if we adopt at the 65% confidence level on both of these, it will at least factor in that consideration for both of those. And it gives us a little bit of a wiggle room. So this is where Trevor gets to come in and provide his advice.
All right.
Don't go silent.
There's a couple things, Allie, that I've got prepared to send your way here soon. And we have a discussion on the property piece coming up in a little over a week.
In the next couple weeks, yeah.
Yeah. So we'll get some more details on that. But just early on estimates, on a conservative basis, I know for liability, they're talking about a 20 to 25% overall premium increase. And again, we've been able to keep that SIR at 3 million, basically since 2005, since we started the program, which is great. We want to keep it at 3 million for the SIR as much as possible. We may get some pressure there, but I think it's really just that premium increase on the liability side of 20 to 25%. Where we're getting hit the hardest there is going to be that police, law enforcement liability. It has just been terrible across the board. It cut a lot of capacity and options for carriers. It hit us really bad the last maybe 2 years, but I think it's leveling off a little bit, but it's still a really difficult market when it comes to liability. When it comes to the workers' compensation side, if you remember, we did a rate guarantee with that carrier. So it wouldn't exceed 4% on that rate guarantee for our 23-24 renewal, but we have to meet certain criteria. I think one of the concerns for the criteria, and I'll send you this whole breakdown as well this week, but I know with the increase in payroll, that may be a section where part of the conditions of that 4% rate increase, no more than that, was keeping around 15% plus or minus payroll. So I think the payroll increase may be a concern to keep that 4% max for the rate, but potentially the higher our payroll, we can work with them on a lower rate increase there. And cyber, like you said, cyber is, you know, your guess is as best or as good as mine right now. That market just across the board has been hit hard, specifically for public entities as well. And we also have some claims that we're dealing with there that has been tough. So, Joyce, did I see you had a question?
I do, Trevor. Could you re-explain to me or in a different way how the payroll is affecting that?
So with the payroll, because we have our set rate, but the higher our payroll, the higher our premium's going to go. Because you have more payroll now multiplied by that rate. Yeah, so for example, this is the first time we've done it, but we, in December here, are projecting to do a midterm update on payroll with the carrier. They allow us to do the one-time update because last year it caught us off guard. I think in the audit that just came up not too long ago, just because with payroll increasing, our premium went up because you multiply that increased payroll by the rate. So while the rate didn't change, the payroll went up, causing the premium to increase. So we had a audit that we weren't quite accounting for just with those changes. So this year we are working with the carrier so that next month we'll send in a one-time update so we can try and reduce that audit on the 22-23 work comp term.
Okay. So Trevor, the city just authorized another payroll increase. Mm-hmm. For employees beginning in December, well, it's actually January, a 6-month increase. And they also did a large increase for police again. So I don't know if you need to kind of hold off with the new numbers for payroll until you get that, or can we put that into the estimate?
I'd say it's probably best to put. Yeah, I'd say we put that into the estimate so we can at least give ourselves another 6 months to spread that out. I know the carrier would like to get the update halfway through the policy if they could. That's kind of the best way to do it. So that would be ideal if we can estimate next month and what we think that's going to be going forward.
I can do that.
With that being said, I think my recommendation would be that to ensure that we cover the bases, because we can always monitor. And Joyce has been really good about this. We can monitor. What I don't want Joyce to have to do is go back to the city manager and say we need more than what we've anticipated, because that impacts the bottom dollar that he's got to go back to mayor and council and ask. I'd rather be able to put it at a confidence level and know that that's what we're asking for up front. So that's why I'm looking at the 65% confidence level. And that's the ask. I'm just a little bit. So let me rephrase that. Joyce, if we were to go with the 65% confidence level, that budget impact is going to be felt by the departments in addition to the money that you're going to ask up front. What is the impact to the departments?
Yeah, I was just looking at the workers' comp table, and we're looking at significant increases already. Just at the 50%.
So then we better stick with the 50%. So, Keith, I think at this point, because they're going to be hit with the double whammy, the 50% is what we need to stick with, because they're going to be feeling it significantly. And then we're going to have to do our homework on the back end for liability and workers' comp, the areas that we've discussed.
I
with.
I was sitting here debating, this is Kate Domer, debating back and forth the 50% and the 65% number. And the debate that was going on in my head is I didn't want to express that we needed to be more confident in our liability number because we were less certain about some of these expenses that were happening, not hide it, but trying to recover costs by wanting to be more confident rather than keeping the same confidence level and adding more to our rates to cover those costs. It seems more appropriate to what we want to do is adding to cover those costs rather than making the liability perhaps artificially higher than we've assessed it in the past because we're increasing our confidence. I still like the 50% level. I am confident. Yeah. I've seen the city already transfer $2 million into our fund. I'm confident with Joyce and everyone estimating the additional costs and adjusting the rates as necessary to cover everything they need. I'm also in favor of the 50% confidence, staying at our traditional and standard 50% confidence level.
So you will need a motion. Yeah, you'll need a motion from your trustees and you'll need to take a vote from the trustees because it's a recommendation that we'll need to forward to Mayor and Council.
I would like to take a moment to see if any of the other trustees want to chime in if they have any questions or comments or anything first. And then if they don't, I would certainly entertain a motion to approve or recommend the rates as established and estimated by the actuary at the 50% confidence level if there's no discussion. But I want to give the opportunity for any trustees to discuss.
Nicole Lowry, I have a question. If we vote on the 50% confidence level and the fund is short or it's going to be squeaky close, is there additional action we're going to have to take at some point or the city would take that action?
So Nicole, to answer that question, if you look at the overall fund and you look at the actual cash, we have money
enough
to handle the actual balance so that we're not going into a negative position.
Okay.
There will be measures that the finance department will take to ensure that we will not be in a negative balance. If we do, there are measures that have to be taken in terms of the Industrial Commission to ensure that we are able to meet our outstanding liabilities, plus we are required by GASB to ensure that we meet our outstanding liabilities. So we will not be in that position. It's just a matter of dotting the I's and crossing the T's here to ensure that we don't. So we have policies, procedures put in place to ensure that that does not happen.
Understood. Thank you.
Yeah, and just to further answer that or throw my two cents in there, I think that the trust, while it's in a small deficit position, still is healthy for the foreseeable for the next few years to take care of everything we're expecting it to incur. And I have trust and faith in the history that we've had with the city that they're going to take the steps to keep our trust secure. In the event that we as trustees become alarmed or believe that the trust isn't healthy enough and not likely to be healthy enough, we certainly, I believe it's our duty, written into our enabling documents that we step in and provide advice to Mayor and Council to step in and do something to fix this. But it doesn't feel like we're at that point or in danger of being at that point, right?
That is correct.
Is that a fair assessment, Allie?
That is correct.
Okay. So then does anyone else have any discussion relating to our trust board's recommendation of rate starting points in concurrence with the actuary at 50%? And if there aren't any, I would certainly entertain a motion to approve the rates at 50% as specified by the actuary, or recommended or estimated by the actuary. And I could probably make a motion to so do so if the chair is allowed to make his own motions.
You are allowed. You will need a second.
I move that we approve the rates for fiscal year 24 as identified in the actuarial report for both workers' comp and liability at the recommended 50% confidence level.
Second.
So that was Keith making the motion, Joyce Garland seconding, if I'm correct. And now I would like all of the trustees who are in favor to say aye.
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 Are there any trustees that are opposed to the recommendation? Then I believe we have all trustees in favor and the recommendation passes, Allie.
It passes. There, it didn't appear to be any discussion, so I think we discussed it well before that. So you have the motion maker, Keith, Joyce Garland, and second, no discussion. Motion is passed. We're going to move quickly on to unfinished business. What you'll see on the screen is at some point in time when we were doing the investment meeting, there was a question on a disclosure statement being provided to those trustees. I basically wanted to provide you a reminder that when you received your boards and commissions handbook, part of that boards and commissions handbook, there's a statement on ethics and conflicts of interest. Basically, this says that board members, when you received your ethics portion of that handbook, you are to refrain from any personal business activity that conflicts with your execution and management of the investment program. You're supposed to disclose any interest in any financial institutions when you're conducting business. And that disclosure can be something as simple as a statement at that particular point in time. There is no document for you to sign. One of the things that Keith asked is that whether or not the attorneys would help with any type of disclosure. But essentially, what it says in your handbook, it also states it in the ethics section of the Arizona Revised Statutes. It says that you're to refrain from participating. So if we were to vote on anything when we're doing any type of investment to move from one fund to another, simple refraining and not voting and not participating, not discussing is expected. If we get to that point, you would be required to raise your hand. You would be required to abstain. You would be required to communicate with the assigned attorney at that particular point in time, but there is no document to sign. I even went as far as reaching out to Luke and Annette to see if there were any type of disclosure statement that they had their clients sign, and there's nothing on file. So I just wanted to report that back to you to see if you had any questions. We can send you the boards and commissions handbook and the actual statements to you. There's also reference to the city's administrative directives, the rules of conduct. It's 202-5 that I could send you so that you would have that on file, but I'll be happy to get that to you at the end of this meeting so that you have that on file. Does anybody have any questions regarding the non-disclosure statements and your responsibilities in terms of the investment that we would be participating in going forward?
So, just to be a little more clear about what my specific question was, it's that second bullet right there, disclose any material interests in accordance with all applicable laws. That makes me feel like I need to have a general understanding of all of the laws that might apply to make sure my disclosure is okay. What I heard back from you after the research that you did was that there are no laws that are applicable to this situation that require anything other than verbally disclosing and non-participating in any related action?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Hearing none. The next item on the agenda for unfinished business is the Declaration of Trust, which we amended in May of 2021. In the amendment, one of the things that we did through all of the red line versions that we went through, I don't know if you recall the numerous meetings that we had with Cassie Langford, we did a major oversight, and it wasn't caught until we were getting ready to go to a huge settlement with the city attorney. One of the things that we did in the red line is we eliminated the city attorney. The city attorney is the only person that consults with the mayor and council on settlements and takes settlements beyond our authority to the mayor and council for approval consideration. We need to revise that amendment, that section, which is 18-9.8, and bring it back in. So we will need to come back and meet again to restore that responsibility to the city attorney. I consult with the city attorney. We both agree. We need to make sure that we restore that responsibility to the city attorney. In addition, you heard us talk about bringing forward part of our responsibility as we work on the fund is to ensure that we start bringing forward workers' compensation full and final settlements. We need something in the Declaration of Trust that allows us to bring forward settlements. Right now, our settlement authority for the city attorney and myself is for property damage. We can settle up to $20,000. If it involves combined property damage and bodily injury, our settlement authority for both the city attorney and myself is a combined $40,000. When we look at work comp settlements, we're talking six figures or beyond. So we need settlement authority beyond that. So when we come forward, we were looking at increasing the settlement authority. So we want a separate section that allows us to do that. What that will entail is us writing a separate section and bringing it forward to the trustees for approval. That's going to require a separate meeting. So what I want to do is to be able to work with the city attorney. It will probably be a meeting that will last all of maybe an hour for the trustees to review, give us your input to approve or disapprove. And we can bring it forward to mayor and council. Any questions on what the amendments will be? So there would be two amendments. One, we would amend section 18.9.8, and then we would add a separate section dealing with workers' comp full and final settlements. Any questions? Oh, you guys are really ready to get out of here. Okay. Moving forward to the next. Board terms. So if you've noticed here, it's been updated. One of the reasons it's been updated is Jeff Yates resigned his position. So you notice that Joyce is representative on the board as the interim finance director. This has been updated as of November 25th. Joyce actually assumed the role August 10th. She'll be in the position until a replacement has been named. Our person going off, our next term actually will be Nicole Lowry. Her role actually ends October 9th of 2023. So she would be the next person that we will replace, as well as Joyce. And so I wanted you guys to be aware so that we can start recruiting for Nicole Lowry. She can serve a second term, which would be another 4 years if she so desires. But just so that you're aware that the terms are there. And if you know of anyone that is in the role, we would be looking for someone in the risk management area that would be able to fill in that capacity. Any questions?
And Ali, this is Keith. Just for my information, this is my second term. And it's
yes.
Everyone else is in their first term. Is that correct?
That is correct. Everyone is in their first term, including Joyce. So you're all here for at least 4 years, except for Nicole. So next on the agenda is I wanted you guys to be aware that this is your staff pool. We are finally fully staffed. We have with us here a lot of new folks. Martha Castro is now in the role as the liability claims manager. She was a claims adjuster. She is now a claims manager. Joanna Velasquez is new to our team as of May. Lynn Wojcik is not new to our team, but she is now the enterprise risk analyst. Mike Smith, as the safety specialist, is basically in his role for a full year now. Leonard Kiwis comes to us from Tucson Water. He's basically in his role now for a full year. Adrian Othon is in his role, brand new, also from Tucson Water, in his role less than a year. Lance Todd moved up, so he promoted into his role as a safety and environmental compliance specialist in his role for about 8 months. Daniel Partida comes to us from Parks and Rec. He's in his role for less than 6 months. Ben Laturco promoted to his role as a compliance specialist from Tucson Water, so he's in his role for less than 6 months. Our newest employee is David Carrasco. He's in his role for less than 2 months. Vince Tracy has been in his role now, complete role, for a year and a half as the safety and loss control manager. And just to give you guys some news, I will be retiring as of June 5th. So I just wanted to let you guys know that we are fully staffed, but you guys will be looking for a new risk manager, risk management administrator. I just wanted to give you that information. So this is the org chart as of October of 2022. And then to end the year, I wanted to let you know that Lynn, as the enterprise risk analyst, has actually been able to apply for what we now have as our own Target Zero Get Home Safe. We now have our own, believe it or not, our own registered trademark name, so no one can take it from us. The reason for that is, unbeknownst to me, Vince Tracy and Martha Castro and Maria Robinson submitted an application, and I apparently became the risk manager of the year for 2022. And through that process, when they presented me the award, they liked the logo, and someone wanted to steal the name, so we quickly applied for the trademark. But I did want to let you guys know that we do have our own trademark. While we're going through this relatively quickly, I wanted to let you know that we are required to meet annually, and we have to complete a form to do so. And so at this point, Keith, I'd like to know whether or not the trustees want to continue to meet virtually. And if so, we need to complete a form and get it into the clerk's office by December 23rd. Is that something that the trustees would like to do? Meet annually, virtually, or if they want to meet in person? And if so, that needs to be decided today. Remember, we have to meet to address the amendments that I just spoke about briefly on the previous two slides.
I have not had any challenges or problems meeting virtually. It has worked out well for me. I understand there could be reasons why other trustees might want to meet in person. If anybody, I'd like to hear from the other trustees what they might think about the form of our meeting and if they think that more than annually is necessary, supplemented by these additional meetings when something like the amendments come up and we need to have a supplemental meeting to address the amendments. But I'm happy with virtually and I'm happy with annually, but I can certainly be swayed one way or another. Any other trustees want to weigh in?
I agree with you. This is Ted Moeller. I agree with annual meetings and virtual meetings. But I would be easily swayed if somebody felt differently.
I too really appreciate the annual format and virtually, but I'm not opposed to meeting you all in person again.
Right. That's three.
Okay.
Okay.
Do we need a formal action, Ellie, or just a general consensus and discussion? And you can prepare the form for me, unless if there are any other trustees that want to state their preference.
I think the general consensus will get it. I will go ahead and get the form completed, and we'll go ahead and send it to you, Keith, and get it off.
Thank you.
Get it off to the boards and commissions office. Just wanted to let you guys know, obviously, I sent you the annual report that was requested by Keith, so thank you. I'm glad you appreciated it.
I did appreciate reading it again.
Thank
you. So can Ellie remind me, the trust board has to make an annual report to mayor and council, and is that going to be the annual report that just gets transferred? Is that correct?
The annual report from the prior director was the financial report that was included with the CAFR, but you're right, there's a little bit more to it. You do get to see what the staff is doing, and so when I was initially hired, this is something that the director who hired me at that time thought that this report, the risk management report, provided value, and thank you for asking for it, because you do get to see what the staff is doing, and it's not just wasted.
I appreciate it. It does
give you an idea, and the trends do allow you to see what's going on. And Trevor, thank you for asking for the subrogation report, because you do get to see the value that it provides and the work that's put into it by the various departments, the various units. So I appreciate that. So make sure you do pay attention to the trends, the challenges, and the different things that the staff does. It was kind of challenging to put together after the fact, because I didn't do what I normally do. I asked the different units to provide information to me about 2 weeks before year end, so that I can start putting things together. I didn't have that vantage point this time, but I was able to go in and pull things together for you so that you would at least have it. And then I'm going to close with something that I don't sing my own tune, and someone came to me and said, how dare you forget? But I did want to share with you the video that was put together when I became the nominee and then the eventual winner of the award. So I'm going to share that with everybody. You'll get to see the actual video that was put together by Aon when I became the Public Risk Manager of the Year. So I'm sharing that, and that's what I'm going to end the meeting with. You guys can stay, or you can go ahead and close out the meeting. But thank you all, and I'll send out the meeting notice for the amendments.
Ellie, I think I need to say I've been working with you for 5 years or more now, and I have appreciated every moment working with you. You have been conscientious. You have been smart. You have been hardworking. You have assisted the trustees in fulfilling our responsibilities in so many wonderful ways. You are very much going to be missed in your position as the risk manager for the city of Tucson, especially in relation to your work with the trust board. So I have appreciated getting to know you and working with you. Thank you very much, Ellie. I do hope you totally enjoy your retirement.
Oh, I will. Thank you so much.
Ellie, we're not hearing it.
It's because I don't know technology.
But you look great.
Hi.
Maybe drop it in the chat.
I don't know.
Yay!
It's over.
Drop it in the chat.
I don't know.
There's still no audio. Allie, maybe if you have the link to that, you could post it in the chat and they can open it from their home computer.
Yeah, I tried. Yeah, I can't do it.
If you did email us a link or posted the link somewhere,
I will email everybody the link because it's not working. We tried.
Okay.
Well, I promise to watch it when you send it. Congratulations.
Good
for you.
Well
deserved. Thank you, Allie.
Do we need to call to the audience? Do we need a call to the audience or anything officially before we adjourn?
Yes, we need to do a call to the audience. So let me do this. Let me stop sharing. Because it's not working.
So if there are any members of the public here at the meeting that would like to speak, now would be the time for you to address the
questions. Yes.
And I'm not
and
here.
And I will drop it in Midley.
Okay.
No call to the audience?
I didn't hear any.
Okay, then we need a motion to adjourn.
I'll move that we adjourn.
Okay.
That was Keith Domer. There's a second. Okay, is that all we need? All right, it was wonderful seeing everyone again virtually.
Good seeing you, Keith.
Take care, Vince. It was nice
Thank
seeing
you.
You.
Good seeing you too, man.
We'll see you all later.
Bye, everybody.